We're into the Sweet 16 of the women's tournament, and the same question remains. Can anyone stop South Carolina?
And are there even any underdogs left this week on Underdog?
The cry goes up both far and near for Underdog.
Underdog.
Countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
By George, the dream is alive.
Underdog.
And I guess there's only one thing left to do. Win the whole fucking thing.
It's the Underdogs back with you. It's our women's Sweet 16 episode. We are so excited to discuss a tournament where there are no underdogs left, and that's the end of the show. Bye. I'm your host, Jordan Brenner, joined as always by Peter Keating. Peter, seriously, though, there are chalky brackets, and then there's whatever the hell is left in the women's tournament. Holy crap. This is favorite city.
I guess there's two ways to look at this. You might say this is a really good job of the selection committee in seeding, right? Because all the teams are winning in the order that they were dropped into brackets. But unfortunately, I think we were a little ahead of schedule last year with some of the crazy upsets we got, and not just games being more competitive, but a lot of people, maybe myself included, thinking that maybe it was a little more chaos in the women's game than there is. I mean, the game, you know, we'll talk about this, but the game is getting, there is more parity coming, but it's coming a little slower and a little less than we thought at the moment.
Yeah, and look, our model saw this, right? I think we only had about 10 games that had more than a 10% chance of an upset. But I will say this. One of our favorite upsets on the board was the only real upset in the first round. It was Middle Tennessee against Louisville. Another one we loved was Florida Gulf Coast against Oklahoma, and Oklahoma won by 3. So we had our sights set in the right places for upsets.
There
weren't a lot of opportunities.
Right. This is important for people to understand, because the same factors that when underdogs carry them in the men's game increase the variability of their scoring and make them more likely to catch up to a better opponent, which would include crashing the boards for offensive rebounds, pressure defense to force turnovers, particularly live ball turnovers, taking lots of threes, keeping a slow pace. Those do show up as important in the women's game. We're not talking something so fundamentally different. There was a question for a long time. Are the shooting percentages of women in college ball so much lower than men that these factors would be completely different or carry different weight? And last year, the teams that pulled off big upsets, especially in the second round, last year, two number one seeds went down in the second round. Those upsets were pulled off by underdogs that were strong on the offensive boards. And the question was, in my mind, would there be a bigger variety? Could teams do something else in matchup styles to narrow these gaps? Mm-hmm. Well, they did. They're all over the place. All different kinds of underdogs showing interesting styles, keeping games closer than expected, even in games where the spreads were huge, but just not enough to win.
Well, and that's where I want to talk about two second round games, one that came to fruition and the one that came way closer than everyone but us thought it would be. So the first was the Duke women as a 7 seed took out Ohio State. I don't think a lot of people saw that coming. You did. You wrote about that. What did you see beforehand, and why were we on that?
Look, I say this a million times, but when there's not access to good advanced data, whether it's women's college basketball or lacrosse or baseball or football.
What about curling? There's good curling data.
There's really good curling data. And I can't wait till the next Winter Olympics. We should do a few shows dedicated to curling. Have you ever gotten out on the ice, Jordan? I have.
I have not. I feel like I'd be good at it, though.
I think a lot of people feel that way, which is why it's actually sneaky popular. But I digress, as usual. Look, when you don't have access to good numbers, what do people do? They overvalue the eye test. So exciting, flashy, famous players get overrated. And also one-loss records get overrated, right? So in Duke, you had a team that was better than their record. They were 2-5 in games. They have gone 2-5 in games decided by 2 possessions or less. They also had some skills that we thought would hold up in the tournament. Opponents are shooting lower than 40% from inside against Duke. Most important, they have players all over the court that obstruct the other team, 4 steals. And this doesn't really show up as significant in our model, but I always think it's interesting. 3 of their players are averaging more than a block a game. That means a very highly active, disruptive, bothersome to the other.
We call that rim protection in the business, Peter. Rim protection.
I'm not always sure it's at the rim.
You think they're blocking jump shots?
I think, well, have you watched Duke? Yeah, they are.
No, I've, you know, Peter, of all the things in my life that I watch, really, I don't watch much.
You haven't watched the Duke women's team? But here's the other thing.
Of course I've watched Duke.
Ohio State, 263rd in the country in offensive rebounding. What does that mean? It means when they need extra possessions in tight games, they don't get them. When they lost to Caitlin Clark, when Caitlin Clark bombed them with 35 points, when they lost to Maryland, the Big Ten tournament, when they were shooting poorly, they needed extra chances. They couldn't generate them. That's what happened against Duke, and they went down.
And then let's go to the other game that was a thriller. The final score is not indicative of how close this thing was. Again, the Duke game was the only real upset in the second round. There were a couple 5-over-4 ones, which we don't even count. But, man, Iowa, West Virginia, everyone thought this was going to be a Caitlin Clark cakewalk. Our model gave West Virginia, what, like a 40% chance of winning? And damn if they almost didn't.
Yeah, so betting lines saw this as the biggest gap between any two teams on that day. Our model saw it as the narrowest gap. Look, West Virginia was a little underrated. Iowa, nothing bad to say about Iowa's offense. I mean, Caitlin Clark.
Something bad to say about Iowa's offense. Well, they committed 15 turnovers in that game.
Yeah.
West Virginia's back, baby.
Press Virginia is back, courtesy of the women's team, as a student newspaper said in Morgantown. But I don't think it was Iowa's offense that faltered here. I mean, nobody else was shooting well other than Clark. So they got Clark the ball and she did just enough to win. It's just that West Virginia steals the ball on 16.5% of opponent's possessions. I mean, one of every six times you have the ball, West Virginia will slap it away. That is a staggering number. We've been doing this long enough to know. We have seen Press Virginia. We've seen Stephen F. Austin. We've seen VCU. We've seen Abilene Christian, right? We've seen Iowa State on the men's side. When you can force that number, that rate of turnovers, you're going to be disruptive and you have a chance to win. They did exactly what they needed to do. After the game, I saw the pundits saying, oh, and West Virginia got out of their game. Iowa forced them to take too many threes. No. West Virginia was trying to go up the risk reward curve. They took a lot of risks. They played players with fouls. They took a load of threes. They were doing everything they could to maximize their chances of beating a better team, including their standard nonstop, relentless, successful pressure defense, and it almost worked. Weren't you conflicted? I was like, oh my gosh, our model would look so great if West Virginia actually pulled this off, but did we really want to see Caitlin Clark go down? So, I mean, at least they covered,
yeah,
right?
It was very upsetting, but I got to tell you, I have thought Iowa is a little bit overrated. I've seen them more than anyone else this year because, again, Caitlin Clark's on TV all the time. There's just a lot of options. God, it'd be an amazing story if she wins a national championship. I don't think she will.
You got to be careful, right? I mean, Caitlin Clark has 4.8 turnovers a game. That's a large number, but she turns the ball over that often because she's always touching the ball. As a team, Iowa doesn't actually turn the ball over that much. They fared fairly well against what West Virginia was doing against them, I thought.
So let's turn our attention now going forward. The same question holds, and it's the same group of teams because there weren't a lot of upsets. Is the South Carolina versus the field argument. I think we were both gravitating toward UConn as a 3 seed, as a potential upset national champion. And now look, now they've got, we like Duke, but I don't think we like Duke to beat them. And that gets them into the Elite Eight against a USC team or Baylor, neither of which we're super impressed with either. Paige Beckers is playing better and better. Like, Peter, you may have been onto something early with UConn.
Look, UConn is underseeded. There's a bunch of teams that are national title contenders. UConn should have been at the top of that group when it came to seeding these teams. Our model says after adjusting for opponent's strength, they've outscored their other teams by an average of more than 50 points per 100 possessions. It's incredibly impressive. All the stats that measure guard play are off the charts for them. If you believe that a team needs a superstar to carry them, Paige Beckers is that. And maybe best of all for UConn or any of these other teams, but UConn in particular, is that you have two teams that the whole country is waiting to see as in some kind of championship setting. You have Iowa State on a collision course with LSU, and only one of those teams is going to survive, right? So, yeah.
I mean, look, I don't know that Iowa is going to play LSU. Look, I'm still on the whole big into the Pac-12, okay? And we've still got, 14 Oregon State, UCLA, USC, Stanford left. I will believe in that conference until I'm proven otherwise. And I'm Stanford almost lost against Iowa State, but they survived and advanced. I still think those teams beat up on each other all year, and it's going to be really interesting to see how far they can go collectively.
Well, I will say this: in the men's game, when you have very strong offensive rebounding teams playing very strong sharpshooting teams, it does not work out for the long distance shooters. It's just very rare. Teams that dominate the offensive boards tend to do very well in tournaments. And LSU was massively impressive in that last game, coming back from being down at halftime. I mean, LSU is going to be tough to take out for any of those Pac-12 teams.
Well, I will certainly be rooting for UCLA because Kim Mulkey may be the most unlikable individual in sports right now. Just her disgusting Marjorie Taylor Greene-esque rant about an upcoming story that hasn't been published was just so gross. And what I'm really angry about is that she stole attention from the tournament, from this amazing moment in women's basketball where ratings are breaking records, where there are true superstars on four or five teams. Like, this is a golden era, and we have to listen to this woman complain about a reporter who is doing his job exactly right because it's always about her.
You know what I don't do when my hair clogs the sink, Jordan? Okay, you know, when my hair clogs the sink, I don't walk up and down the street screaming that all plumbers are corrupt and stupid and out to get my family. Okay, that's what I'm gonna say. Okay, right. You got some receipts to show. Put them on the table or shut the hell up. You know, I don't care how she dresses. I don't even care who she votes for at this point. I do care that she thinks it's a joke about giving other people infectious diseases, but don't get up there and spout all this nonsense about something that's not even published yet that you have no specifics to defend yourself on. I'm going to read the story now. You'd be damn sure about that. And I think a couple of million other people will. Get off my TV.
Yeah. Best part was her complaining about the reporter giving this to her at the last minute when he'd been in the same sentence. She mentioned that he's been trying to get her to sit down with him for 2 years. That's called reporting. Yeah. And you had your chance to explain your side of the story. I can't wait to read this. I can't wait to see her out of the game. She is a bad person.
Look, it's our business. I have a stake in this, but when you can't tell the truth, don't go public with your inability to tell the truth. Now, Jordan, I'm not kidding about LSU's offensive rebounding. LSU might be a little overvalued they can't be overvalued is what our statistical model is saying. So, you know, but I do like UConn, and we don't even talk anymore about South Carolina.
Well, that's what I was going to ask.
We're the underdogs, but South Carolina, holy crow, what a program.
Is this all moot? Is this just going to be a coronation? Like, are any of these teams, honestly, I know we said, look, statistically, you should take the field. It's the right thing to do. But God, this looks like a runaway freight train that nobody can stop, right?
Well, they've destroyed their opponents in this tournament so far. So whatever percentage chance you were giving them of stumbling early, it was even less than that. But Jordan, the gap between South Carolina and the next two or three teams is about 10 points lower than it was last year.
Right.
That's where the parity is happening. You have viable contenders. They could lose to UConn or LSU. I'm just saying it's not a foregone conclusion they're going to win, but should appreciate them while they can. The most impressive thing to me about South Carolina is they're doing everything statistically that they always used to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they've added great 3-point shooting. They're almost 40% from beyond the arc. They were 300th in the country last year. It's incredible.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. But I think to the point you were making a second ago, we have to remind ourselves that, part of the 47-point blowout of North Carolina is the fact that there is this real drop-off after the top 4 or 5 seeds. It's why we have such a chalky Sweet 16, right? So they are going to be tested much more going forward. I don't know if Indiana is going to provide the tests we want to see, but certainly when they get into a regional final against either Notre Dame or Oregon State, and then whomever they face in the Final Four, it's going to be a different kettle of fish. And there are some true, like we talked about, true superstars who can take over a game as well, who can make this very difficult for
them. Look, talent is dispersing through the game. It's not just in one program. It's not just in two or three programs anymore. There's talent coming to different schools all over the country, but it's not happening so fast that it's even or happening all at once. There are sandbars and big steps down on this beach, right? So there's a big drop off after the first handful of teams. There's another big drop after the first 10 or 15. And you see that reflected in the wipeouts we saw on Friday and Saturday. But there's still there's a small number of teams. This would be very exciting because a small number of interesting teams with great superstars. That's what makes this tournament really great.
Well, I'm excited to watch over the next few days who emerges. By the time we do another show next week, Peter, we'll be down to four teams. And in the meantime, check out our YouTube page for coverage of the women's tournament. Obviously you can get both the men's and women's clips, information on our Instagram, Underdog Show. Until next week, I'm Jordan. That's Peter. Enjoy a lot of basketball.
And it's the women, so I can say go Duke.